Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Of your Toronto Blue Jays and Major League Baseball. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, it is Baseball Central for
Friday,
April 29th.
You happy guys Friday, all, Jeff.
Happy Friday, Mr. Burke. You guys always get worried when I stuck in any, I get stuck in anything that starts with the F word. I don't know why. I don't understand why. It's the Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. I already said that, I know. Jays and Rays will play tonight. 7 o'clock, first pitch on Sportsnet 590, The Fan of Sportsnet Ontario. Aaron Sanchez on the mound for the Jays. Drew Smyly, another left-hander for the Rays. Now, if they stink it up tonight, after seeing, this will be the third lefty they've seen in a row. The stuff that Josh Donaldson said after that, after losing to the White Sox, it will resonate even more. But Blue Jays Central with Campbell and Zahn will be at 6:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. As I said, first pitch just after 7 on Sportsnet 590, The Fan of Sportsnet Ontario. And don't worry about, don't worry about the NHL draft lottery tomorrow night. We will have the game. The Jays game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on Saturday. Jerry Howarth will keep you informed of the draft lottery as the game goes along. Mr. Barker, a lot to talk about today, even though the Jays did not play yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
We got a big weekend coming up. The Yankees and Red Sox are facing each other. Always interesting when those two teams get together. But we got to talk out of the gate. I guess the big story in baseball this morning, D. Gordon of the Miami Marlins, testing positive for two substances. He's been slapped with an 80-game suspension by Major League Baseball. And it's kind of interesting, Kevin, because we had John Paul Morosi on my show along with myself and Stephen Brunder earlier this morning. And we were talking about how the collective agreement between the players association and ownership is being negotiated this year. And you're starting to hear and starting to see more and more players on Twitter, like Justin Verlander came out today. You're starting to get a sense that players are almost getting to the point where they want to see further, maybe harsher action. John Paul Morosi said, you can talk to guys, you'll find guys in the clubhouse that'll say, hey, there should be a lifetime ban for a first time offender. If you're caught with something and, you know, it's proven that you knew what you were doing, there should be a lifetime ban. That's a little extreme, mm-hmm. But we're also hearing things now. And D. Gordon's a perfect example. Guy signs a multi-year contract with the Marlins last year after a good year. Now we're starting to hear people say, wait a minute, maybe when that happens, teams should be able to go back and reopen the contract and say, look, we gave you this contract in good faith. Now you show up and you're suspended for 80 games. That probably won't happen because the Players Association, the whole idea of the guaranteed contract is sacrosanct. But I wanted to ask you as a former player, and we've started to hear people like Jose Bautista and Josh Donaldson talk about this as well, would you be in favor if the Players Association and the Commissioner's Office even stiffen the penalties even more?
100%. You're talking about maybe like missing a year an entire 100% for first offender?
Yep.
Why not? Yeah. The only way you're going to get it completely out of baseball is to start getting in guys' pockets a lot.
Yeah.
Meaning 80 games is a little bit, with these guys that make all this money, are a little bit of a slap on the wrist. If you get in at 162 games in an entire year and you don't get paid for an entire year for these guys making a lot of money, yeah, that's a stiffer penalty. People are going to know exactly what they're taking at all times. If you want to legitimately get rid of it, and you never hear from it again, obviously you're going to have that weird case where a guy's just, you know, doing it and it's not very smart with it. But for the most part, the more you get in guys' pockets, it's going to get rid of it sooner. And I agree with everything you just said. It's what's wrong with whenever you sign a deal and it says,
I'm not necessarily in favor of it, but I'm saying that's
what people are not in favor of what?
No, I think you sign a contract and it should be a guaranteed deal. If I sign a contract with a team You know, they're taking me for all, warts. They're taking me for everything.
Well, you signed a guy for him to be playing, not to be sitting out 80 games or 162 games because of something that's not related to on the field thing, like being hurt. You can deal with that, but it's something you put in your body, and it's against the rules. Yeah, I got no issues with an owner saying, "Hey, what about me?" It's like, you know, we pay these players all this money because they're that good, and we want them on the field as much as possible.
Just to be clear, when a player is suspended, he is suspended without pay. But what we're talking about, for example, in the case of D. Gordon, would be the Miami Marlins starting a process by which the 5-year contract is overturned, and either they get a year taken off it, or they can renegotiate with his agent once the suspension's over.
And you don't like that?
No, because, well, I mean, I like the fact that, and I sort of tend to look at it from a pro players union point of view. I think you've got guaranteed contracts. You hang on to guaranteed contracts. Well, you don't want to become like the NFL.
If you're an owner, the only good thing about that is you don't have to pay
right
for the 80 games. But
you know, and the argument that gets made too is, yeah, okay, I'm an owner. I don't have to pay this guy for 80 games, but I got to pay someone else to replace him. And then I got the damage of a guy coming back in the middle of the season. I've got the damage to my brand, essentially. D. Gordon, batting champion.
Right.
He's going to come back to the Marlins. You know, now the Marlins have a flawed, part of their brand is flawed.
Well, we talk about all the things, you know, all the rule changes around second base and home plate. This is something that needs to be tweaked. I really do believe it needs to be stiffer. You need to make sure that guys understand that we're not going to tolerate this.
Yeah.
Enough's enough. And the only way you do that is to get in guys' pockets a little bit more. You do that, people listen. They get it.
And I think that's probably where we're going to go. Anyhow, that's the D. Gordon situation. 80 game suspension for D. Gordon. And, of course, this just on the heels of Chris Colabello being suspended, Chris Colabello of the Blue Jays. You know, it's interesting. We talked a lot, and we're going to be joined by Mike Wilner in a few minutes, but we talked a lot in the past couple of days about the Jays' offense. Clearly, the bullpen's a big concern going into tonight's game. 7 losses out of the bullpen this year. The bullpen has not been very good, but we've also talked about the inconsistent offense and inconsistent offensive approaches. Manny Machado of the Baltimore Orioles was scuffling. What was he, 0 for 16?
0 for 16 in the last 4 games.
What did he do last night?
He was 2 for 4 with the Grand Slam.
2 for 4 with the Grand Slam. But this is what he said afterwards that kind of interested Kevin and myself. Derek, can you play the clip?
It looked like you made a conscious effort to use right field, and you could do it pretty well.
Well, you got to go back to roots, you know, when you're struggling a little bit and you miss a couple pitches. You got to go back to roots and go back to right field, and that's what I did today. I went back to the tee and the drawing board. So, you know, it turned out a good night, and hopefully we continue it.
That's courtesy of our friends at Masson Sports Network. Kevin, that comment caught your attention for a variety of reasons.
Well, it did. First of all, after last night, he's hitting .333 with 7 home runs and 16 RBIs. Now, coming into that game, he was 0 for 16. Obviously, he wasn't seeing the ball. And what he meant by that comment of going back to the tee and getting back to his roots and going to right field, he's a right-handed hitter. Trying to go to right field means he sees the ball longer. He lets it get deeper. He uses his hands. He keeps his front shoulder in. The thought process is there. And saying I'm going to go back to the tee, I'm going to go back to my roots, is meaning, you know, you can manipulate the baseball on the tee and make it go where you want it to go over and over and over again. That way, when you get in the game and you get that pitch that you can go to right field with, everything just tends to go there because you've done it so much off the field. And for a guy like this, one of the best players in baseball, that understands that, hey, 0 for 16 is really not that big of a deal. It's 4 games. But it can escalate into a longer period of thing if I don't get mentally between the years back on track. Thinking right field, that means I get a breaking ball to left center field for a grand slam. Well, you say, why? Well, why'd he go? Wasn't he trying to hit that to right field? His thinking was, I'm going to stay on that breaking ball a long time, and I'm going to react in. The breaking ball was in, bases loaded, he hits a grand slam because he's thinking right field. I'm thinking keeping my front side in. I'm landing with a closed front foot, meaning everything's going towards the pitcher. It's right. Thinking
nothing's,
about second.
Nothing's sprayed out going.
100%. I'm not getting pull happy. I'm not pulling off the ball with my head. I'm not pulling off the ball with my shoulder. None of that. It's the thought process. I've said this over and over again. At this level, it's not really about mechanics. It's about talking yourself into something. He's talking himself into think right field. I'm going to walk to the plate. I'm going to pick something out in right center field, and I'm going to try to hit the ball right there. And then I'm going to react in. That's what he did last night. He hit a double, I think, down the right field line, and then he hits the grand slam to left center field. That's what we're talking about here. It's an approach, and when great players can do it, and they can do it consistently, why can't everybody else in the big leagues do it? So, you know, it just when I was listening to that, messing around with my son this morning, I'm thinking, hey, that sounds a lot like the Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. Really, 1 through 9, when they're consistently raking, what are they doing? They're spraying the ball all over the place. They're hitting it everywhere because they have that great approach. And I think that's what Josh Donaldson's talking about. Compete. Go up. Know what you're doing. Know what you want to do and react to the pitch.
Well, let me ask you this. What can a pitcher do? Because we hear guys all the time, right? Trying to go to the opposite field, trying to go up the middle, trying to go to the opposite field, you know, yada, yada, yada. Okay, the pitchers hear that as well.
Sure.
How do the pitchers attack that? Like, how? Tell me why it's so difficult for a pitcher to adjust to a guy who's doing that.
Okay, it ain't about the pitcher. I've said this over so many times, I get tired of hearing myself say it. You have to split the plate in half. You can't cover the entire plate. So you have to get the pitcher something. The pitcher's that good. They obviously know what they're throwing and what count they're throwing it in and where how they want to attack you. But you split the plate in half. You can't cover the whole thing. So just eliminate what you're going to do. And I think that's what Manny Machado was saying. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you the ball in.
Yep.
Okay? But everything middle away and up, thigh high, I'm going to think about hitting that in the right center field gap. And then I'm going to react in on the breaking ball.
Right.
So you basically eliminate what a pitcher's trying to do to you because you're basically approach saying, with your mind.
If you throw a good fastball in, tip my cap to you.
If he can do that 3 times in a row and strike you out, tip your hat and walk away, say, I'll get him next time.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the consistent thing of walking to the plate and having that idea and picking that out because it's a mental thing. You have to talk yourself into it. Talk myself into, I really have to stay on this ball. I have to stay through it. And then I just react to a different kind of pitch. He's not trying to hit the whole plate. You can't. Mm-hmm. If you do, you won't be in the big leagues long. So even the great ones have to split it in half, look certain location and not so much certain pitch. You do that and have that good approach mentally.
You're not a fan of going up and looking for a certain pitch.
It's hard. Because what if he throws you a different pitch you're not
You'd rather look location than pitch.
Well, sometimes, obviously, if you're facing a guy that throws a lot of changeups, like a Marco Estrada, what do you do with that? You know, sometimes you have to pick your poison. It's one or the other. You can't hit both of them.
Right.
So I'm going to try and hit one of them and stay away from the other one. So, you know, it's all at this level, I think what he did say and all that, what I got of it, it's all about the approach. It's all about what you're thinking other than your mechanics. If you're thinking, stay on it and hit this to right field. Well, mechanically, because you're so good and you've been in the big leagues and you understand what you're doing, it's just going to go where it goes.
We're going to be joined in a few minutes by Mike Wilner, by the way, Blue Jays third man in the booth and our pre and post game host. I was going to try to find the pitching matchups for the weekend. That's okay. I already said Sanchez and...
Happen Archer.
Oh, there you go. We already got Sanchez and some. That stupid Travis put it right in the front page, the lineup. Silly boy. How dare you put something right in front of my face in a logical location and expect me to find it? The hell's up?
It's Friday.
Saturday, Jay Happ against Chris Archer. Sunday, Marcus Stroman against Jake Odorizzi. Not an easy 3-run of games for the Jays. Then it gets easy, though, because you only got Texas and the Dodgers coming into town.
Kershaw. Man.
Yeah, we do know the Jays are going to get Kershaw. We just don't know exactly when, you know, barring weather, when that'll be. The Jays last saw the Rays. Of course, they started the season with the Rays. Chris Archer. 1-4 with an ERA of 5.47. Look, Buck Martinez was very clear, and you guys both talked about this. You talked about it as well. I was going to say that you thought something wasn't right with Chris Archer.
Yeah, physically, he didn't look very good. His mile per hour was down. That's a big deal for a guy that throws as hard as he does.
His last start was better. Last start was better against the Red Sox, right?
Was against the Orioles.
Against the Orioles.
He went 6 2/3 and didn't allow a run.
Yeah.
It's when he. A fastball slider guy has to have the mile per hour because he wants to overpower you. It's not much of a finesse kind of thing. It's a slider fastball combination, and when it looks the same, it looks like a fastball coming out of his hand, and then it has that late bite to it. That's what he's looking for. He needs that 96, 97, and when you're throwing 93, basically they can sit and wait on the breaking ball. They don't have to get out on their front foot because they're respecting the hitter.
Anybody can hit a 93. Most major league hitters, I should say, should be able to hit a 93-mile-an-hour fastball.
Well, if they don't, they won't be in the big leagues long.
Right.
That's just the way it is. So I think the Orioles, when I saw him last time, he looked like he wasn't throwing his heart and he wasn't commanding pitches. Now, again, it gets back to you know, we talked about Marco Estrada all the time. He wants to get to his changeup. Well, you have to get ahead of guys to do that. How does he do that? He goes down and waves the fastball. A guy like Chris Archer is no different. He wants to get to the slider. How do you do that? You get ahead of a guy, and then you get guys out on their front foot because they have to respect the mile per hour, and then he drops that slider on them, and then he makes them look silly. It sounds to me like on Monday he's got the mile per hour back and he's got location back. When he's got that, now you're really going to have to battle. It gets back to that approach. Split it in half and look for one or the other.
How does Drew Smyly, the lefty they're going to see tonight, compare to Quintana and Sale?
Well, I don't think he throws as hard, but he commands four pitches. He's throwing four pitches where he wants to in any count. When you do that again, it's silly that I keep saying this at this level, but when you're facing guys like this that know what they're doing and they can go both sides of the plate with four different pitches, how do you hit that? Mm-hmm. You can't cover the entire thing. You have to split it in half and look for one or the other. You're going to pick your poison. I'm going to look away in any count for any pitch, and I'm going to think the other way, or I'm going to look in, and I'm going to sell out, and I'm going to try and hit this to the pull side, and I'm going to do it that way. I can't cover the whole thing. So if they do that to Blue Jays, they're going to have a shot. If they don't and they try to cover the whole plate, it's going to be a long series for them in Tampa.
Let's bring in young Mr. Mike Wilner, third man in the booth, pre- and post-game show host, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I understand you were the hit of Tavistock last night, the pitch talks at Tavistock that I couldn't go to because of my voice.
Yeah, it was terrific. It was a terrific evening at the Tavistock last night. Everybody had a great time.
Yeah, the pitch talks, taking it to a place like that is such a cool idea. I really think it is. And you know, baseball is so popular in rural Canada. Sometimes I think people forget that. You know, it's hugely popular.
You know, the underserved communities are it's a wonderful thing to do, and they were really thrilled to have us there. So it was great. And you're sounding better than me right now. So
yeah, what the hell happened to you? No, let me guess. I know you were in the limo with Brunt and Davidi coming home. You must have pounded the butt all the way home, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what was going on.
Yeah.
No, and Ben and Arden too.
Oh, yeah. Ben. You know, Ben gets crazy, man. Ben starts taking his clothes off. You know, it gets ugly. Man. It gets ugly quick when he hits the bottle.
It was a solid scene in the limo last night, but no, it's just I've been sort of fighting it the way you had for the better part of a week. So
better part of a week, dude. I've been fighting it for a month. Don't feel bad. We just found out that the morning show producer had swine flu. Ryan Mons. He told Dean Blundell Company this morning that he had swine flu. So there you go.
Oh well.
Anyhow. Well, Mr. Wilner, what are you expecting from the Jays? No, never mind what you're expecting from them. What are the callers going to be like this weekend? What are the callers going to be like tonight if the Jays lose?
You know what? The callers have not been off the rails. I expected, you know, after the Dickey game, I expected a lot. After Wednesday night, I expected a lot of anger and upset and fire this guy and release that guy. But it's been measured. I mean, there's been disappointment and there's been frustration, and the people should be disappointed and frustrated by the start. But I don't think anyone's gone off the ledge yet.
Mike, I think the one question everybody wants to know is how do they get out of this? Obviously, the American League East, you know, it's all fine and dandy. You're pitching the ball well, and you know, on occasion, your bullpen's doing okay. But it gets down to you have to outscore the other team. I think everybody wants to know 1 through 9 – 2 through 4, 2, 3, and 4 in the lineup. I don't think we have any issue with that. You know, I've asked a lot of people on this show and on other shows what they're seeing and how this team 1 through 9 is going to get out of that. What are you seeing?
Well, you know what? It's funny because from like the middle of Friday's game till the middle of Monday's game, they were back and hitting, you know, the team. This was a team that we had expected to see, right? It didn't last very long. But I kind of thought, you know, after they fell behind 6-1 on Friday, and then they sort of started to rally and almost came back. That was kind of the old Blue Jays, and then they just pounded on Saturday and on Sunday. And then they started out Monday really, really strong. I thought, all right, you know what? This is what we've been waiting for, and this is a team, and now everything's going to be fine. And they've scored one run in the 24 innings since then. So it's continued to be up and down. But I really think all that needs to happen is things just kind of need to settle. Michael Saunders has been fine, so really 1-4 has been not an issue. Though Jose Bautista hasn't been hitting for the last, say, week or so. But it just, for me, it's just a matter of everything normalizing, and it obviously hasn't yet. But, you know, Kevin Pillar, Russ Martin, Troy Tulowitzki aren't going to hit 200 all year long. These guys are going to get back to being who they are, and it's just, I don't know how it's going to happen or what needs to happen for it to happen, but it's going to happen.
You know, we had Mark Shapiro on yesterday, Mike, and he made the point that obviously focusing in the bullpen is an issue that, you know, I mean, we asked him, do you think that you have the answers internally right now? And he said, I can't equivocally say that. And I'm not certainly advocating going out and trading for relievers or anything like that. But do you think at some point we're going to have a discussion about Aaron Sanchez going back into the pen? You know, as a result of something other than an innings limit?
Maybe. I think that there was an internal argument, we all know, during the spring, say, how are the Blue Jays best served? Is it with Aaron Sanchez in the rotation or with Aaron Sanchez in the bullpen? And Sanchez just kept pitching so well that you couldn't deny him a spot in the rotation. But now, you know, it's funny because all spring long, I was saying, look, the Blue Jays internally want Sanchez in the bullpen, and it looks like he's going to be in the bullpen. And people were telling me I was insane, and how could you think that, and why would you ever do that? And now I'm getting, man, they need to put Sanchez back in the bullpen. Why isn't Aaron Sanchez?
Well,
in the
and the thing is, you know, I tell people, I mean, look, you spend time down there in spring training, you talk to the general manager, the coaches, and the manager. I mean, you're not blowing smoke. There was a healthy debate about whether or not Aaron Sanchez starts in the bullpen. I mean, there just was.
There certainly was, and now we're sort of seeing why. And I'm not suggesting that had Aaron Sanchez been in the bullpen, the Blue Jays would be 13-10 now instead of 10-13. No idea, like, what kind of starter Drew Hutchison would have been or Gavin Floyd or whatever. But now you sort of see why they were thinking that, and maybe they will continue to think that. And, it would have to be Hutchison if you do it anytime soon, because you can't just say to Gavin Floyd, hey, all right, you're going to start now, stretch yourself out. Doesn't work that way. I think that would be a very, very tough thing to do. But it's possible. But you know what? Sanchez has looked great, like great in three of his four starts. And if he throws tonight like he did in those first three, then it makes it harder. If he gets lit up again, it doesn't make it that difficult. But I don't know that you can make that decision this quickly.
Okay, Mike, the Blue Jays, I don't have to tell you, but I'm going to say it anyway. 6 with the Rays, 3 with the Dodgers, 3 with the Giants, 7 with the Rangers. Next 19 games, that's pretty tough. Seventh inning rolls around. Brett Cecil's having trouble getting right-handers out. Do you still throw him or do you go to somebody else?
No, he's having trouble getting everybody out right now, but John Gibbons says you still throw him. And so that's where John Gibbons, I think, is going to go. And the thing is, who's the great alternative? Not that Cecil's pitching well, but Drew Storen's not pitching especially well. Jesse Chavez has been okay, but, you know, he's gotten knocked around. I think Floyd's probably been the next best reliever besides Asuna, and I don't know if you want to hand him the seventh inning yet. But I mean, Gibby believes at this point you still got to throw him to get him out of this. And I think that's where he's going.
How about righty-lefty matchup? This game, I talk about this all the time because I used to try and hit, and I know when I had issues it's because I didn't have any confidence. Well, you watch Brett Cecil, you watch Drew Storen. What's the one thing that pops out to you? Their confidence is not there. So how do you get that back? To me, you match it up. You meaning Storen comes in and faces a right-hander, left-hander's on deck, he comes out of the game, vice versa with Brett Cecil. What do you think about that?
I don't have an issue with that at all. I think that may be the best way to get them back on track, and you match them up and you give them the best possible. You put them in the situations where they're the most likely to succeed. Cecil hasn't been kind of a lefty specialist because that curveball's been so good that he's been able to get righties out. He's not burying the curveball this year like he did last year. So maybe, last year when Cecil struggled so badly at the beginning of April, Gibby backed him off and took him out of the high leverage spots until things started to come around again. He hasn't done that yet this year, but, that might be the best thing to do. If you're not going to back him off completely, do like you just said and just kind of slide him in to places where the odds are heavily in their favor, and it wouldn't surprise me if he did that.
Mr. Wilner, we're going to let you scoot. Look forward to your work this weekend.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Mike.
Mike Wilner of our Blue Jays broadcast crew and pre- and post-game show host on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, in addition to the three Blue Jays games this weekend, and they are tonight at 7, tomorrow at 6. I forgot about that in Tampa. Start early tomorrow at 6, which is great because you get to the bar earlier. And Sunday at 12:30, we'll also have Sunday Night Baseball, Yankees and Red Sox, beginning at 7 o'clock Sunday in Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Nathan Eovaldi for the Yankees, some guy named David Price for the Red Sox.
Who?
Some guy. Guy can't win in the postseason.
Oh, come on. Ouch.
That's true. We've got Barker's Bundesliga picks coming up. We've got a surprise. We've got a surprise as well. And we'll also have Craig Calcaterra, lead baseball writer of NBCSports.com, wrote an article this morning that got my attention as soon as I came in here. It kind of helped structure a lot of the discussion we had today around D. Gordon. And Craig Calcaterra in particular dealt with the whole notion that Major League Baseball players are becoming more and more in favor of toughening penalties against steroid or PED users. So Craig Calcaterra joins us. And Barker's Bundesliga picks when Baseball Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand, absolutely free. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Baseball Central. It's a Friday. Jays and Rays tonight at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet Ontario. Campbell and Zahn at 6:30. First pitch at 7 o'clock. Jerry and Joe with the call of the game. Mike Wilner will be manning the between-inning stuff. And he will have the Blue Jays talk right after the final out on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And don't forget, tomorrow we will have, even though the NHL draft lottery is on, we will have Jays baseball on Sportsnet 590 The Fan starting at 6 o'clock. Jerry will keep you updated on how the Canadian teams are doing throughout the night. And then after the game, we'll have a special live edition of Tape to Tape with Ryan Dixon and Garrett Joyce. That starts at 10 o'clock. On Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So there you go. You can listen to some baseball. You're not going to miss a thing with the NHL draft lottery as well. Kevin Barker and I spoke at the start of the show about the 80-game suspension handed out to D. Gordon today. A couple of interesting articles on this written, both of them by the same person, got my attention this morning. Craig Calcaterra from NBC joins us. Craig, thanks so much for doing this.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
I loved, I saw Justin Verlander's tweet and essentially, his tweet was, I'm not going to repeat it word for word, but essentially he was wondering how guys can still play when they're appealing these things. But, you know, it's funny because I was thinking of that. We've seen Jose Bautista and Josh Donaldson and this team in particular become really outspoken about, you know, guys using PEDs. And your article got me thinking about maybe something that has been underreported or maybe something we don't necessarily realize. But I think this current group of players right now is probably more anti-PED, more pro-enhanced testing than any other group of baseball players we've seen. Whether that's because society's becoming more conservative, I don't know. But you raised a couple of interesting points about the possibility that we may see in this round of bargaining on a new CBA, we may actually see the players ask for stricter penalties.
Oh, yeah, they're going to absolutely. And I'll even go further than what you said. I don't think that they're just the most adamant group of players in the anti-PED thing. I think they're more adamant now than the owners are. And more adamant than even some in the media are. You saw David Sampson from the Marlins comments either last night or this morning. I don't think it bothers him that much. He's saving a couple million dollars on D. Gordon's salary this year. He'll be welcome back. Bartolo Colon is a love story in New York. Johnny Peralta and other players have gotten large contracts after their PED stuff. It's the cost of doing business if you're an owner. The players are angry. The players view this, and this is not just me projecting. Brandon McCarthy, the pitcher for the Dodgers, was tweeting about this last night.
Mm-hmm.
They view this as cheaters taking roster spots and service time from other players, taking money out of their pocket. And whether that's an overreaction, whether that's a reasonable reaction, I don't know. But it's really how at least the most vocal players in the game feel. And I think that, you know, in some ways it's understandable, but I think they're going to shoot themselves in the foot by walking into the collective bargaining agreement negotiations demanding that the rules be harsher upon them.
You know, and you also made the point that this is Tony Clark's first go-round, first set of negotiations as head of the Major League Baseball Players Association. And in the past, look, there have always been internal disagreements in the MLBPA about a variety of things. I mean, Don Fear will tell you that. It hasn't always been the unified group that we see publicly, but that's the whole point. They were able to deal with it internally, right? And present a unified public approach. That's going to be hard for Tony Clark right now, because if this becomes a negotiating point, he can't go in front of the media or can't go in the public and say, well, you know, my constituency doesn't want penalties made any harsher. We're going to go, oh, wait a minute, there's ample evidence here that a few of them at least do.
Yeah, not only does it undermine his public position, he can't do that. He can't go into a negotiation with the owners and expect to get any sort of, his job is to get a concession from the owners for anything he gives up. That's how a union negotiation works. And if the owners know that the players are all in the tank for harder testing, how is Tony Clark even supposed to do his job? And, then again, maybe he's not doing his job. His job should be in the outset to make sure the players know that these disagreements are to be handled in-house, not in public. That's what the best book you're ever going to read about labor and baseball ownership and negotiation is Lords of the Realm, came out like 20 years ago or something. And there are chapters in there, not just about Marvin Miller winning successes for the union. That was the story we ended up hearing. It was how hard it was for the first, 8-10 years of him running the union to get all the players on the same page, but he did it. And that's where the power came from. When he walked into a negotiation, he could make a credible threat to the owners that we will walk out if we don't get what we want. Tony Clark can't make any credible threats on this right now because the owners know that the union membership doesn't back him.
Craig, is this getting scary for baseball? I used to be a baseball player, and you know, towards the end of my career, I just didn't take anything. I was so scared to take an Advil. It was, I just didn't want to take a chance because I didn't want to lose money. I couldn't afford to take any chances whatsoever, even with Advil. Is this getting scary for baseball? Because, it's when a long time ago when I played, you could sort of tell when a guy was using something. And now it's not that way. It just seems like players are taking chances because they can take them. And is that a real scary for baseball? I know there's only been 5 suspensions this year, I believe. But I don't know if that's a lot or that's a little. But is that a little scary?
Yeah, there were seven last year. There have been years where there were more. The biogenesis thing sort of changes it. I guess the question, it's two questions that you point out there, really. I mean, the one thing is, no, there isn't evidence of greater use or some dramatic spike in use. If anything, it's possible we haven't really seen any increase at all, and there are a lot more things that are being tested for now, and the testing's gotten better. But at the same time, you do make a very good point about the disincentives involved. B. Gordon has a $50 million contract, and it's severely backloaded. He's only making $3 million this year. So his penalty in this year, you know, is not much compared to
$2 million. In 2016, yeah, he's losing $2 million.
Yeah, exactly, out of 50. So if you're going to gamble, I mean, think any of us, if we were fortunate enough, would gamble $2 million for the chance at 48, and that's what he's doing. So that's the question of what do you do to change and at least keep the disincentives there as salaries escalate and the cost-benefit ratio changes.
Craig, do you foresee a time where, as a result of this, you know, sort of this gradual, I was going to say moving together on the part of the players and the owners, as you say, the players may be even moving beyond the owners, but do you see us getting to a point where there's some sort of mechanism where if a guy fails a test or is suspended in the first year of a multi-year contract, that contract is declared null and void, or there's some other mechanism to allow the team to get some sort of redress from the situation?
Well, the contract voiding thing, I would be very, very surprised to see that ever happen. And if it does happen, I don't think it's hyperbole to say that it is a complete and utter failure and maybe even collapse of the players' union. Mm-hmm. Because the players' union's whole purpose in the modern era was the creation of the guaranteed contract. The reason why baseball players are not abused like players in the NFL is because of the guaranteed contract. That was perhaps, I mean, free agency is what everybody talks about, but the guaranteed contract is probably the greatest accomplishment of the union. If that is ever undermined in any way, and in the past it was not even discussed, then the players have just, they've, you know, like they say, let the camel's nose in under the tent or whatever, and they open themselves up to have to negotiate about everything that they thought that they had. As far as redress and financial stuff, I could see some tweaking. I mean, if you have a situation like Gordon and he's so backloaded, you know, rather than just the salary forfeited during the suspension, maybe you do the math a little bit different. You make it a pro rata of his entire deal or something. You know, because that's the thing I think a lot of guys get mad at, these contracts that are being handed out, maybe on the basis of cheating. And if that's the case, maybe make it hurt a little bit more. But the idea of voiding, I think, is just, it can't be on the table or else the union should just give up.
Craig, it was good of you to join us. Thanks so much. Fascinating stuff. Great articles.
Thank you very much for having me.
Craig Calcaterra of NBC's Hardball Talk. Lead baseball writer for NBC Sports. But it got me thinking about the implications of this happening during a year or during a time when the Players Association and ownership is working on a new collective bargaining agreement. And, you know, I may have to reevaluate things, because I just assume that, like I said, I assume that players, guys who are in a position to cheat are probably going to cheat. Guys who make a lot of money can probably get away with better stuff than other guys. Maybe I have to be a little less cynical. I don't think so.
I think you do.
You know what time it is? Yeah! Want to sing along with me?
No.
Jeden Samstagnachmittag, ja, da ist was los.
In you sing it.
Ist die Spannung riesengroß. Alle wollen Tore.
Travis gets mad at me, and I'll let this play for a minute.
Wenn es gab, dann ist es
oh,
wunderbar.
Boy.
I think there's some sort of CRTC thing. We can't play music for a minute, right? I don't think this is copyrighted. Here we go. Just hang on. This part's the best part.
Dann macht es bumm. Ja, und dann kracht's.
All right, it is time for Barker's Bundesliga picks.
Man.
Got a couple of toughies for you today. Today, on Sportsnet World, today at 2:30, FC Augsburg against FC Cologne.
Well, I'm going to go FC Cologne. 2-0. That's an easy one. Come on.
Why?
I just said it's easy.
Okay.
There's no reason.
You like Cologne. You normally
I do.
You
I
say
love
that.
Cologne.
All right. Actually, not a bad pick. Saturday at 9:30 a.m. Bayern Munich, or as you call them, Bayern Munich. I think Bayern Munich was a point guard.
I'll just stop right there.
Bayern Munich.
I'm going to go Bayern Munich.
But they're playing Borussia Mönchengladbach.
I'm going Bayern Munich.
I want you to say Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Wait, what's the second one?
Bayern Munich.
No, the other one.
Bayern Munich.
Bayern Munich.
So you're not going with Borussia Mönchengladbach?
Borussia Munich Gladbach. No, yep. I'm going with the first one.
All right.
2-0.
2-0.
Oh, boy.
And here's
one. I
owe
you.
Hertha Berlin against Bayer Leverkusen.
I'm going to go.
This is a tough one. This is tricky.
I'm going to go Bayern Leverkusen.
No. Well, I was Bayer Leverkusen. It's not Bayern Leverkusen.
Was that a bad pick?
Bayer Leverkusen.
Boy, I'm going to get you three,
against,
I tell you that.
Against Hertha Berlin. That's a tough pick.
I'm going Hertha Berlin.
In the upset.
Yes, I always go upset.
All right. What's the score going to be?
1-0. Wait, no. I don't like 1-0. I'm going to go 2-1 on that. It's the same thing, right?
You can pick draws, you know.
Right? What?
We've decided to throw a curveball at Mr. Barker. Here we go. Oh, yeah. It's a good thing Glenn Healy isn't here. All right, a special bonus pick from Kevin Barker. The Scottish Premier League, 7:30 a.m. Saturday on Sportsnet World. Heart of Midlothian.
Okay.
I had that one time. It's pretty good with a little rosé sauce.
Right.
Against Celtic.
I really want to go Celtic because I can't say the first one, but I'm going to go the first one. Say it again just because.
Heart of Midlothian.
Heart of Midlothian. No, yes. Not even close. Was that close?
Close
all
enough.
Right. Yeah, we're giving that.
So you're going to go with Heart of Midlothian against Celtic. And what's the score there? That's a bad pick, by the way.
But I don't care. I'm going to go 3-0.
Oh, come on.
Why not?
Okay.
You think that he did, didn't it?
What the hell was that?
Why not?
All right, there you go.
Was that a bad pick?
Celtic's like the only, well, I mean, Celtic's the only legitimate team in the league for the most part. It's okay. It'll do. All right. Rangers. Kill the bagpipes.
You three are dead to me.
All right. People are going to go out and bet money, and this is a result of your picks.
Man, I'm sorry, people.
Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Thank you.
We've come up with something, by the way, because you know, of course, that when the end of June, we're going to go on TV. We're going to be there for the summer. And, of course, the Euro's on. There's going to be no Bundesliga. So we've come up with something. Barker's going to make some Euro picks over the summer, but we're gonna make him pick a man of the match just because we want to hear him pronounce some names.
Boy, I'm going to get you, man.
Yeah, so we decided we would do that.
I'm going to tell you that.
We decided we would do that. We'll get him to pronounce some names.
Bud.
I'm going to give you the choice of three players, or we'll actually do first goal score, something like that. Anyhow, God, it's good being back here.
It is something. Glad this is a baseball show.
It's a baseball. Well, we had a lot of good baseball talk and a lot of good baseball this weekend. Three games between the Jays.
And then you get to make fun of me on Friday. Isn't that awesome?
It's not making fun of you. It's an in demand. I look at it as value added. I look at it as value added, frankly.
Nice.
Don't forget, baseball tonight, 7 o'clock, Sanchez against Drew Smyly. Saturday is a 6 o'clock first pitch, J-Hap against Chris Archer. Sunday, 12:30 first pitch, Marcus Stroman and Jake Odorizzi. And as I said, if you're worried about the draft lottery, have no fear. During the Jays game on Saturday night from Tampa, Cherry Howarth will keep you abreast of the situation. He'll give you all the news you need to know about where the Canadian teams are going to pick, even though we all know that the Edmonton Oilers are probably going to win it again. For Kevin Barker, Mike Wilner, Craig Calcaterra, it's the Kaiser, Jeff Blair, saying thanks so much for joining us in Baseball Central. Enjoy the baseball this weekend. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody.